Yesterday, when I finished up, we were talking about some lessons to be learned by the young men. I said I would pick up there this morning. Now, as I do that, we have an excellent model to examine. And as we examine this model that the Father left us in His Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, and we look at what He does in this particular situation, I think it draws for us what I hear gals, single gals, saying today in what they would like to have if they're to be married. Leave that if in there. If they're to be married, this is what they'd like in a young man. Let's take a look. Latter part of verse 6. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with His finger. When they kept on questioning Him, He straightened up and He said to them, if any one of you is without sin, let him begin stoning her. Again, He stooped down and He wrote on the ground. Now, let's kind of reenact the situation. A gal's been caught in adultery. She was not fully clothed. That's an understatement. As they're rushing her to the temple courtyard where Jesus is holding this seminar and talking to all these people, she just has time to grab just maybe a robe, but she's just partially dressed. She's shocked. She doesn't know what's happened. She's frightened. Did you notice about up in verse 5, I believe it is, where it says, and they made her stand up. What's happening is, I'm sure she's wanting to kind of curl up out of fear into the fetal position. She's wanting to hide. Not being fully clothed, this kind of wanting, I wish I wasn't here, cramps down. And they keep standing her up, holding her up for all to see. I'm sure there's some guys there saying, she's about an 8.5. Oh, I'd give her about a 7. Totally embarrassed. But not only that, she starts receiving the word of why all this is taking place, and they're talking about a good stoning. She's thinking, I've had it. And Jesus does something here that's really very beautiful, guys. He leans down and just kind of starts piddling, I guess. There's been all kinds of speculation what he was writing on the ground. One of my favorite theologians that I probably would agree with on this particular subject more than anyone else, Grady Nutt. Grady says that Jesus was writing their girlfriends' names down in the sand. I don't know what he was writing. And it really doesn't make a lot of difference. The point is, he got their attention off of her. They stopped staring at her. They started watching. Well, what's he doing? We're asking him questions. Why didn't he face us? What's he writing in the ground? They started crowding up, kind of ignoring her at this point. That takes the pressure off. Let me pause for just a second. Well, I am so much for campus evangelism. I try to make it a point in my schedule, and I don't have time to do this. Neither do you, but you take the time if it's priority. I try to visit anywhere from 3 as a minimum to 5 hours every week on the college campus. Not going to see necessarily anyone in particular except to try to share with them about Jesus Christ. I have in my schedule every Monday morning, after I've gone to the office, work through my administrative work in a sense, at 9 o'clock I go to the college campus to share Christ. But boy, there's a great lesson here for those that march on the college campus to share Jesus Christ. He never tried to embarrass anyone. So I use that as a rule. I try to make it in such a way that I never embarrass anyone in my approach to share with him about Christ. But he's taking the pressure off her, in a sense, in the scribbling. But he's not finished. Now, that is a very tender, sensitive act. I've already picked up on one point, guys. Here's the word, tender. I cannot remember one gal, and I've examined, I've asked questions to single gals for the last 4 or 5 years. Christian gals, what do you want in a husband? What are you looking for in a guy that you date? I've never heard one yet say, I'm looking for a guy that's really macho. Not one. But I've had a number of them refer to the word that could be summed up as tender, sensitive, a good listener. And he does something here that's so sensitive, the word I'm going to use is tender. When he takes the pressure off of her. But now then there's another side to this. And this is the side we miss sometimes on Jesus. It's the part that some of us have a hard time doing. He takes the stone and he comes up and he says, you throw it! You're without sin. You sense some anger. You sense some backbone. You sense some direction. There are times in life that on your campus you must stand up and say, that's wrong! I work with athletes a lot. And I want you to know that there is a sin that we are committing in America that is knee-deep on all of your campuses where you're giving scholarships to students. You would be shocked in the Big Eight in the Southwest Conference, and I don't know what other conferences, those are the two main ones I know about, how much under-table money goes on. It's surprising. But that's not the biggest crime. The biggest crime that we're doing to athletics that we need to stand up and say, stop it, is in the area of academics. Not all athletes, but some. I can give you a basketball player who's become a Christian just in the last year on our campus. He's in the top 25 in the pro list. 2 years ago, he attended a class one time, got an A. That's wrong. Somebody needs to take a stand. We need to encourage people to stand up for those things that are wrong where people are being misused and abused. Now, that's just one little area. But you as a student have an opportunity to do some things, to be on the cutting edge of standing up and saying that's wrong. Where's the voice on world hunger? Where's the voice that we need to readjust our lifestyle? You see, it isn't can we afford it. And if we can afford it, it makes it right. Not for the Christian. For the pagan, that's okay. But a Christian is called to a higher lifestyle. When are we going to speak up? And you say, but Charlie, that's really not spiritual business. Hey, get off of that. You want to follow Jesus? Pick up the rock of world hunger and get tough there. And take a stand. First by modeling it. Pick up the rock of cheating. First by modeling it. And decide whatever the cost is. You know, one of the reasons I selected the wife that I selected, one of the things that attracted me to her, well, one was her body. She's good looking. There's nothing wrong with that. But one of the things, after I started dating her, on about the third date we were talking, she was an English major. At that time, she had never made anything but an A in college. She was minoring in Russia. After we'd been dating about 3 or 4 months, she took a humanities class. And it was a humanities class that had 500 and about 50 students in it. It was notorious for cheating. Dr. White was a teacher. He just let all kinds of things go on in that class. And it was a very easy class, in a sense, because you could cheat. And my wife made her only C on her college transcript. All the rest are A's except 2 B's in physical education. She made her only C. You know why she made it? Because she refused to cheat in that class. And it cost her. Her average grade on the test were 93, but the grade on the curve. Did you ever average 93 and get a C in class? Boy, that attracted me because that quality. And she stood up very quietly and said, I'm not going to cash in. I don't care if everybody else is doing it. I'm not going to. I thought, man, that's the kind of gal I want. Guys, that's the kind of guys, gals are looking for. Guys that know when to stand up and say, no, this is wrong. Yes, this is right. Now, do you have enough character? Do you know what you're aiming for? Jesus knew what he was aiming for, and so he's able to stand up and say no to the right thing and yes to the no to the wrong thing, yes to the right things in life. And so right here, he could be very tender with this lady, yet at the same time, he could pick up the rock in life and say, no, can you do that? Bring it to a close now. I guess there are several reasons, if you knew me well enough, that you ought to be glad that I'm not God. But if I knew you well enough, there'd be several reasons I'm glad you're not God either. But many times in my own life, as I look back in the rearview mirror and examine my own life, I haven't done it God's way. I may have even had the right attitude and a lot of zeal, but I've done it the wrong way. And I'm going to share with you a place in my own life when I should have been tough and tender, and my aim was right. I just went about it the wrong way on this thing of tough and tenderness. Southwest College University, San Marcos, Texas. A couple of years back, I was asked to go there and do a campus revival. It lasted 3 nights. We met in the student union. We had Miss Texas, several singing groups coming in, and I'd do the speaking, and we did our bit. Every night, we had 600 or 700 students coming, and we thought that was successful. I was speaking in 4 or 5 different classes during the day. A lot of things were going on, but we did not see any visible results. Every night when we'd offer an invitation, I mean, absolutely nothing was happening. When we visited in the dorms, people were open, kind of excited about this. It was kind of being known all over campus what was going on, but no visible results. Well, that kind of bothered me inside. I kept saying, what's wrong? What's wrong? The last day I'd been invited to come and speak at 11 o'clock in a psychology class. And there in that class, I had been asked by the professor, who was also teaching that class and head of the Department of Psychology, to address the Christian's view of the total man. So I did. I talked about how God looked at us emotionally, physically, spiritually, every side. And we all work in all of these areas and did my presentation. I said, do you have any questions? There were several questions, and I thanked them, and we dismissed. The head of that department, the prof, came, and he said, I've got a graduate class this afternoon. It's a rather large graduate class. But he said, would you come and do the same presentation? I said, sure. I went into that class, and sure enough, it's fairly large for a graduate class, but I made the same presentation, and then I said, do you have any questions? He asked the first question. He said, yes, I've got a question. I said, what is it? He says, isn't it true that the Dead Sea Scrolls disprove the reality and the reliability of the Old Testament? Well, I don't know if you know anything about the Dead Sea Scrolls, but it's just the opposite of that. I mean, he couldn't have asked a question. By the way, this guy was a non-Christian. He couldn't ask a question that, boy, you could just sock it to him and show him how foolish he was. In fact, I'd just been studying, you know, P26, P25, these things on Dead Sea Scroll, and I was ready. Man, I quoted from P25, P26, and how they were so similar and all this, and I said, you couldn't be more wrong. I noticed his face started turning red. I nailed that guy to the wall. I mean, I made him look so foolish. As we dismissed, I said, do you have any other questions? Of course, there wasn't anybody else that was about to ask a question. They all left, you know, and I'm standing down there, and I'm thinking I did so well. Several Christians came to me and said, boy, did you get that prop? Did you get that pagan? Way to go. Oh, man, yeah, isn't that great? Isn't that great? He walked out and said, I don't care how long I teach, I'll never ask another Christian to come back to one of my classes. See, what happened was, I won the battle, but I lost the war. I could have stated the truth of that to say, I think you need to go back and been a lot more kinder without embarrassing him. I could have been a lot more sensitive. There wasn't any big deal about P25 and P26. But I'd acted like the hot shot. You see, I'd nailed his hide to the wall. Now, let me get real direct with you. Too many of you, if there's one, there's too many, are reading Josh McDowell and going to your class to nail your professor to the wall. Stop it. I can't tell you one professor that's ever been nailed to the wall as one to Jesus. 3 professors, 1 assistant football coach this last year became Christians in our church. 1 was elected the outstanding professor on the Oklahoma State campus. In every case, It was a student that influenced their life. I've gone back and examined this. In every case, a loving student who was in their classroom that took their work seriously won them, was the influence of winning them, was the avenue that God used to speak. You've got more power than you realize, but be tender, especially with the pagans. Be tender. Don't need any rocks thrown there. I didn't end that story because we finished up that night, and again the last night was our bumper crowd night. We had people standing. They couldn't get even in the room. They listened again. No visible response when the invitation was given. We finished up, and a guy named Randy Galloway, who has two arms had been blown off by a volt of electricity, two arms missing. He came to me, and he worked on that campus with the BSU as an associate, and he came and he said, "Hey, we've got a dorm rap going over there. I've been arguing a lot. Would you come over and meet with us?" I said, "Sure." Went over there, and there's a room. We're crowded, but there were about 30 of us in a room, and I said, "Okay, you guys, how many have been coming?" Every one of them had been there at least one night, and I said, "What questions did you have?" No questions were asked. I said, "Okay, let's do something." I did something you shouldn't do. It's an old Quaker dialogue. I said, "Let me get to know you." And I was tired, and I didn't want to talk anymore, and so we did a Quaker dialogue. We started around, "Tell me something about your family structure, where you were raised, what kind of house you lived in, your family." And we got the second question, "Who's influenced your life in the greatest way?" We started around the room, and it had been very, this answer, factual up to this point. We got to the fifth guy in the room, and I didn't know it at the time, but a great big old tall, lanky guy was the leader of the pagan group. Pretty intellectual, pretty sharp, knew how to ask questions. But he stood up. Everybody else just kind of stayed seated, but he stood up and he started going like this and kind of moving around uncomfortably, and he kind of choked up, and he said, I've never had anybody really love me like some of the rest of you guys," and some of the guys had talked about their parents loving them, how they'd influenced their life. He said, "I've never had that happen." He said, and he told about his childhood when he got off the bus, how his parents had kind of emotionally abused him in such a way that he'd go home and lock all the doors and wait till they got home from work. On weekends, the only time he ever saw his father was drunk. Immediately, he said, every Friday when his dad pulled up, he'd get out of the trunk of his car, two cases of beer, one for Saturday, one for Sunday. He said, "That's all I've ever known in life." He said, "I've never known what you guys are talking about. I wished I could tell you I did this, but I didn't." Another guy from the Baptist Student Union got up across the room, walked all the way across. I thought, what in the world is going to happen now? He stood right there in front of him. He said, "I want to apologize, Jack." He said, "I want to apologize for what I've been doing, how I've been trying to set you straight by arguing with you." He said, "All I've ever known is God's love through my parents." He said, "I never did know that about your background. I'll ask you to forgive me." Jack just reached out and grabbed him and just started weeping uncontrollably. Just kind of leaned, and there they stood in the room. And of course, everybody kind of felt uncomfortable for a few minutes. And then Jack asked the question. He said, I want to become a Christian. And this BSU guy started telling him right there in front of everybody how to give his life to Christ. They knelt there in that room. He gave his life to Christ. And another guy said, "I want to do that." And he became a Christian. Another guy, I don't know how many in that room that night gave their lives to Christ, but a number of them. But then another guy came and he said, "Charlie, I want to go talk to another guy. Would you go with me?" I said, "Sure." We went up to a room to talk. Another guy said, "Would you go?" They started taking guys all over that place. We stayed up nearly all night. The next morning at 6 o'clock, I was eating downtown in Sambo's breakfast with five of the guys. And we knew 52 guys by name in dorm rooms that for the first time in their life had given their lives to Jesus Christ. Why? Because one guy was tender enough to be sensitive to a pagan and love him like he was. Yet he was tough enough to take a strong stand. Guys, not only is that what gals are looking for, but that's what God's trying to make you to become and is looking for. The eyes of the Lord go to and fro throughout the whole earth that he might strongly support those whose heart is completely his. God bless you and use you as you become tough and tender.